Welcome to Behind the Bench with Todd Flood. Todd talks about the big legal cases in the news, both locally and around the country. Todd brings you the judges, attorneys, and other special guests who know our current legal system inside and out and how to navigate it. Now here's Todd Flood.
Welcome back to Behind the Bench. We have a very exciting show coming to you this month. We have someone that I respect, Tracy Cooley. She is the executive director of the Detroit Bar Association, a foundation, an association that does so much work that so many people don't know about, and someone that I think you'll be inspired to listen to. We also have, obviously, Todd Perkins, my brother in crime, coming on with us, who's running for the city of Detroit's mayor. Along with Judge Teddy Metri out in Grosse Pointe. Also sitting with us today, we have a new paralegal at Flood Law, Kyra Newman, who is a bright, shining star graduate from the University of Michigan. We have a really exciting show. We're going to talk about some cases that are up on the forefront of the state of Michigan, one that you'll definitely want to listen to. We have some amazing guests, and with us today, we have Tracy Cooley, the executive director of the Detroit Bar. Tracy, it's an honor and a privilege to have you with us. You're the executive director of the Detroit Bar Association that does so much work, but probably gets confused with other places out there in the world. Welcome to Behind the Bench. It's great to have you. Tell us, Tracy, what are you working on today with the Detroit Bar Association?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Yes, we do get confused with the Attorney Grievance Commission and the Judicial Tenure Commission. We do get a lot of calls and emails at complaining about judges and lawyers, and nope, we do not do that. In fact, we help the community with legal services through our pro bono clinic and our access to justice. We provide programming and legal resources to our membership, who comprise of judges, lawyers, and law students. We also provide networking opportunities, mentor opportunities in the form of events and galas. And, we try to do the best for our membership and the community to make an impact, to provide to provide opinions and resources on sometimes the judicial candidates that are running. We want to be able to provide the community an idea of, you know, what is a judge's responsibilities? What are they supposed to be doing? What should they be looking for when they go out and vote? That's one of the areas in which a lot of our community members don't really keep up with. They keep up with maybe local elections, but not so much with judicial. And the judges really make an impact on people's lives, especially at the district level. So we try to do everything we can to provide education to the community, to our membership, and give back through any way we can, through days of service and our pro bono clinics.
I got to tell you, we talk about it a lot on the show, and we have judges all the time that come on. And one of the things that our community, I think, just because it's not out front and center and there's not enough publicity on district court judges and circuit court judges and court of appeals judges, even our Supreme Court for the state of Michigan, we don't get enough. The community at large. You're speaking to a large group, over 100,000 people right now listening to this program, and you'd be. I'm sure you're not, but it's amazing to me how many people don't know who they're voting for, why they're voting for that particular person. So, the fact that you know, as an executive director and the body of people, I'm a part of the association, and I just look around the room and I see such great power of amazing lawyers, amazing people, a part of the group, but it just doesn't seem to me anyway that we get a big enough message necessarily to the public at large. And kudos off to you and making that work. I'm looking at your background and you standing up for the rights of citizens, immigration work, human trafficking work in your past of fighting for and fighting against, obviously, that peril. Give us a little bit of your history, your background of what you've been spearheading and championed in the legal profession.
Yeah. To show my age, I've been practicing since the 90s, and I was one of the first.
You're young. You're young. Trust me.
Well, I actually started out in immigration, and when the Soviet Union broke up and all the countries were basically all the resources were taken and they were left with nothing. Some of the families were selling their daughters. Back in the day, there was advertisements in newspapers.
Oh my gosh.
And so Americans were basically doing these mail order brides. And so they would be bringing people over from Ukraine and Poland and Czechoslovakia and Yugoslavia of those days. And so I would be called in to help get their status and things of that sort. And I always made sure I maintain a relationship with the woman who came through, and I started getting calls of abuse. And in those days, we didn't really call it human trafficking. And so I was able, through the Violence Against Women's Act, start filing petitions to allow them to stay and remove the U.S. citizen from their petition, get their passports back, and get their status in order, which led me to start looking into seeing that there was issues locally. Started advocating with our state legislature here for bills. I was part of 21 bills that passed back in 2014. That Governor Snyder signed in, defining human trafficking, helping those that were brought in this country and being abused, and through labor and sex trafficking, and just really was able to combine my passion for serving to help those that were not born here and those that are abused here. And that led me to the Detroit Bar, actually, eventually, because one of my goals is I love to provide legal services for those who can't afford it. And there's this huge gap, especially in Detroit, of those who do not qualify for legal aid, but still cannot access quality and affordable legal services.
Right.
So with the Detroit Bar, one of my initiatives is we're expanding our pro bono clinic to low bono clinic so that we can start providing actual representation to those in the community who need high quality and low cost services. So it kind of all comes together for me. It's all it doesn't matter, really what the ethnic group or sex or anything. All matters to me is somebody's in need. I want to be there to try to provide that gap.
That's awesome. The fact that you're part and the executive director of the Detroit Bar, I couldn't imagine a better person for the position, especially bringing in today. I mean, think about what's going on today with regards to immigration. I can only imagine how ugly certain cases are. Spearheading that particular area of law, that field of law, so apropos if we look at the world for which we live in right now. Can you stay with us for an extra couple minutes?
Sure, yes. Thank you. Yes, I definitely can.
Absolutely. We'll be right back with Behind the Bench just after this.
You're listening to Behind the Bench with Todd Flood. If it's a question of law and it's in the news, you'll learn about it on Behind the Bench. Once again, here's Todd.
We're back with Tracy Cooley from the Detroit Bar, the executive director of the Detroit Bar Association. So, Tracy, I have to tell you, just being part of this, the Detroit Bar, and seeing all the great work it does, one thing that I know, obviously, in today's day and age, and for all the work, the pro bono work that we do, funding is key and awareness is key. What can we do to get the word out to the lawyers at large that listen to this show, that take advantage of the Detroit Bar? What can we do to spearhead, more contributions and more funding for the Detroit Bar? What would be a good venue or avenue for people listening to participate?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So on our website, which is DetroitLawyer.org, we have the ability to donate. We also have a lot of events. For example, we have an event coming up that's our annual dinner in June. We also have our big golf outing that's coming up in September. It's a great opportunity for sponsoring the event. It's a great way for our fundraising. Vendors who want exposure to the legal community, it's a great opportunity for any vendor services who wants to sponsor. Of course, being a member and coming in and donating, we have fellowship opportunities. We have so many opportunities to donate as a member, as an attorney or judge, or even as community at large to donate to our low bono clinic. We're receiving donations on our website. If you, we would love to be able to roll out our low bono clinic by the end of this year. We need money to run it. So anyone can donate on our website for the Lo Bono Clinic. So there's so many opportunities through sponsorships, through fellowships, through becoming a member. We also have open board seats right now, and this is on our foundation and on our board. So if you're interested in that, you can also go to our website and sign up for that. Or if you want to nominate somebody that you know would be a great asset to our organization. So there's so many ways, and we love money, so we will accept it.
Well, we need it. We need it.
Yes, and we need it.
Right. The work that we do, that you do, that you spearhead, and the passion for which you have it is inspiring, and I truly mean that. Thank you so much for everything you do for the city of Detroit, for the county of Wayne, for people that need the assistance out there, and spearheading really something that I think, unfortunately so, doesn't get enough credit and doesn't get enough recognition in the places that it should. My hat's off to you for everything you do, and I really appreciate you coming on Behind the Bench, and I look forward to working with you in the future.
Thank you very much. We couldn't do it without you, our board members and our membership, and of course, our staff. We couldn't do it without everybody.
Absolutely.
So thank you very much. Thanks so much.
It was wonderful having her on. The Detroit Bar Association is something that's near and dear to my heart and all the great work they do. And as an executive director, Tracy was fine enough to come on. What a great lady for spearheading what she does. Now we have my brother in crime, Todd Perkins, one of the best foremost lawyers in the city of Detroit, doing the Lord's work out there, and also running for mayor of the city of Detroit. It's always an honor to have you, my friend.
Well, it's an honor to be called, and definitely to be able to be on the dais with you. It makes my day every day.
Ah, you're too kind. You're too kind. So, you know, before we get into the thrust of the legal throes of the state of Michigan, the country, the United States of America, tell me, you go at both ends of the candle. If there's three ends of the candle, you would do that. You burn it from all sides. What's a day in the shoes of Todd Perkins like running for the mayor of the city of Detroit?
Well, and going all day and all night is the same thing I want to bring to the city. And a lot of people will ask that question, why? Why now? You have a successful practice. You have friends that you practice with like you and have a great time doing cases together. But at this point, the city of Detroit is giving me so much that I have to give back. It's just like that mantra from the Jesuit tradition, men for others, right?
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah.
But what a day is like, okay, 5 a.m. in the morning is it's not too early to call someone like you. This is when our days start. Right. They end at probably, hopefully they end at 12. So you can get a good 5 hours in, maybe 1 o'clock and get a good 4 hours in. But from that point, you get an opportunity to lay out your day. You get an opportunity because, you know, the phones start ringing about 6:30, 7 o'clock.
Right.
I'm sure they start for you the same way.
Right.
And, you know, you're trying to be anything and everything for everybody. And you may come up short sometimes, but it's not so much that you come up short as the effort that you make in doing it. Because you will, you know, one of the things, remember as younger lawyers, we didn't know as much as older lawyers or maybe about process and procedure. But we knew that if we worked hard enough, we could fix those problems. You know, we knew if we worked harder, we could overcome the fact that you're fighting against this mega corporation and who's got 10 lawyers over there. But if you have that mindset that there's one thing that no one will do in this particular race, they won't outwork me.
That's for sure. I put you on a treadmill and you're going to go until you either die or collapse. No one's going to stop you from lack of heart and lack of mindset.
Absolutely. And so that's the whole day is channeling that energy and taking it and using it for the task at hand for that particular moment. And it meanders not only from some municipal aspect or some, you know, civic duty that we have to serve the people, to serving a particular client. You know, now I'm city attorney in Inkster. So that is a wealth of opportunity that they've given me to represent them. to be able to hold them out as a flagship outlying city of Detroit that's really looking to build itself up. So it has a, you know, I like this word, it has a cornucopia of different things in my day. Mm. So it doesn't lack excitement ever. So I wake up, and now I'm also in the evenings, in the afternoons, and sometimes throughout the day, in periods and times in the day, when I get an opportunity to get an audience and tell them my vision, my dream for Detroit, about how it has already started, and that this energy is going to continue, and it's going to be different, and it's going to be pervasive. It's going to be everywhere. It will be generally accepted that we are the forefront in the leaders of Michigan, the Midwest, and we're going to be the flagship for the country. When at one point in time we were, in some people's minds, never yours or mine, but in some people's minds outside of the city, we were the doormat.
So right.
That has changed. You know, so that, I, you know, that much has changed. But how much more we are in the era of high cotton, I'm going to take our citizens there, and not only the citizens of Detroit, but everybody around in Southeast Michigan, you know, because so goes Detroit, so goes the state of Michigan, and people have to buy into that.
I think more and more the inertia is that way. I think people across the country are buying in, and when they come here and they see what we have and what's building, they see the diamond that we have. And you know, the thing about it is you go outside the streetlights of downtown Detroit and you still had, you know, serious plight. You had problems with, you know, all sorts. And slowly as this expands and we get more protection, we get more education, we get more, you know, things that make it so we're I guess the cornerstone for everyone to look at, I think, is where your heart's at. And, you know, everybody's going to say three things. Every candidate's going to say three things. They're going to say, give me schools, give me police, right, and give me good housing. And so here and where you're at, and what I love about you, my brother, is that your brain thinks outside of the box times 10. And bringing in other, you know, corporations and bringing in more resources to think about, you know, how we take care of our citizens here in Detroit. Because I'm in throughout Detroit, all over the place. I'm on the east side, the west side. I'm in some of the places where people don't want to go. And, you know, that to me is what... As Dan Campbell, our coach, would say, I know a man with great heart. You're a man with great heart. I'm excited about you. I'm excited about your journey in this. So to what?
Well, thank you. I agree about those. I think every candidate's going to say those three things, but they also don't necessarily have the answer to make those things a reality. I believe I know that I have the answer to make those things a reality, and it really starts with continuing. I love that word, inertia. That the business inertia, the financial inertia, the spirit of Detroit inertia, and all of those things that take place. And what does it take? You know, they're finite things. And sometimes I get into these forums and I tell the people, I say, you know, I don't necessarily want to tell you my entire platform, because every time I open up my mouth, a couple of days later, I hear my words being voiced by my the other candidates.
Well, they guarantee they're going to steal it.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, guarantee it. We're going to be right back with you just after this with Behind the Bench and Todd Perkins. Welcome back to Behind the Bench. We have my brother from another mother, Todd Perkins, who I love dearly. He's, you know, running out there every day of the week, twice on Sunday, as he beats the campaign trail for the honor of being the mayor of the city of Detroit, our great city. And Todd, I know this much. I know this much, and I give it to, as our listeners across the city and across the state have been doubling as this show has been progressing. There is no better candidate from the standpoint of knowing the ins and outs of the city of Detroit and the people of the city, because you have been working with the citizens for how many years now? Over 28 years.
Maybe 30 because I was volunteering before while in law school.
Yeah. So the voices that you have heard and championed, you know, God bless you, my man. So I'm with you, and we'll be fighting the fight.
August 5th.
There you go. So I'm going to shift gears here. I'm involved in. I think that we just counted.
Man, what are you not involved in?
Well, you know, I try to keep my sanity. It's hard for me to say no. I don't know why, but it's hard for me to say no.
Because you come up golden all the time. Well, that's why.
Let's not get carried away. Although I did have that $106 million verdict.
What I was talking about. What I was getting at. Yeah. So, you know, give yourself your own flowers sometime, man. Stop being so humble for just a second.
Yeah. Well, listen, okay. This is a case I'm working on that you will, and I have with us today a beautiful young lady, Kyra Newman, who a graduate from U of M, who has been brought into our office to spearhead and help as a paralegal in this and champion this cause. Listen to this case.
Mm-hmm.
Women at the Huron Valley Prison. There's only one female prison in the state of Michigan. That's Huron Valley. There's only one. There's approximately 1,700 women. 1,700 women. And obviously they do strip searches of the women at the prison periodically for certain things. If they are a POA, they actually work. They'll go in and they'll do hospice for the prisoners that are dying. Or they'll go in and they'll sit at the sides of beds of people that are ill. Or they will be janitors or clean the prison and the like. So anytime they go out and do that work, they are strip searched. Now, since January, I believe it's the 12th, they are being videotaped and it's going into the cloud. So the naked strip shirts and full bore naked being videotaped. Now, listen, you have been there. I've been there. We go in. We're 10 feet away from the client. They see us. We get searched. The next thing you know, when they leave that attorney-client meeting, they're strip searched and videotaped. When a loved one comes in, they're videotaped as they're strip searched. I mean, it's unconscionable. I can't imagine. And so we are bringing this lawsuit that's going to hit the forefront, and I'm sure it's going to grab the attention of the headlines around the country because I can't find another prison right now to date in our country that videotapes strip searches. So it's against the law to videotape strip searches. There's an exception to peace officers, but by definition in the statute, a correction officer is not a peace officer. So can you imagine that?
I was not saying anything because I'm so awed and shocked that a practice like this is going on in today's time. I feel bad for those women who and their families, because I can imagine there are women that don't even want to go through that deprivation in order to see their family. And for what, to what end? You know, I'm digesting this as we go along, and I'm thinking to myself, well, are you doing that to the same prison guards that might be people who could have opportunity to bring in contraband themselves? Are you doing that to them?
Exactly.
You know, fair is fair.
Right. Think about that. That's where the nefarious acts take place.
I am so shocked, and I'm so pained that people will have to go through something like that. And you know, it's the first time a lawyer's without words, you know.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Yeah. We have Kyra. Kyra, you've been talking to our clients that we've retained and you've been working on it. We use a term in the law of shocking the conscience. I mean, could you imagine you as a female having to go through any of this?
If I had the opportunity to not, I wouldn't. And that's what a lot of the women inside of the prison are doing. They're not accepting the visits from their friends and loved ones, and they're deciding to quit some of their jobs that are essentially paying for whatever, you know, they need inside of the prison.
It's unbelievable. So imagine you're put into a box, you get let out, but you don't go out if a family member wants to come see you, or your lawyer that needs to see you, you're being deprived of that due process, so the ability to have competent counsel, because they don't want to have to go through the trauma. And get this, I want to verify this stat, and Kyra, you may have the stat with you, but the 90% of the women that have been incarcerated have suffered from some sort of traumatic event of domestic violence or sexual assault. Mm-hmm. So if you think about that, you know, we have that eggshell doctrine, Todd, where, you know, these women already have been assaulted, right? They've already been put into, many of them, raped, many of them trafficked, many of them through domestic violence. Now, all of a sudden, they have to think about, wait, who's watching this video? Is this video available to men? Is it out there, you know, on the ether for men to see? Yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's beyond, beyond comprehension.
I just don't think it should be permitted, or even, you know, no one should be subjected to something like that, whether they're a prisoner or not. And there's other means by which we can detect and do searches that would not be so intrusive and so violating and degrading.
Yeah. And you know, we've listened to these stories where, and Kyra, you probably heard the same, but it's so vulgar, the terms that are being used by some of the correction officers about with some of these women about how to expose their body, how to touch their toes, how to open themselves up, where that wasn't done prior to the videotaping, but now it is like times 10.
How long has this been going on, if I may ask?
Since January, they just changed the policy to invoke this. But what I can't understand is how the Attorney General allows this to happen. You know,
And once you sue, you'll be able to gather all that information, right, as to whether or not they sought an opinion and whether or not the Attorney General agreed and said it was okay, which would make it even, I mean, as bad as it is, it'd make it even worse that a lawyer would say that this is okay.
Right. I can't imagine. I would think, knowing our Attorney General, that she is not in favor of this. She can't.
Oh, yeah.
She can't be. I mean, that would go against everything we know, that she would be in favor of this. But you know what? We're going to sue. We have over 500 clients. We're going to make this happen. We're going to ask for a temporary restraining order to stop it. And, you know,
make sure in the temporary restraining order, they'll stop it, but then that stops the visits. Make sure it says that just because it stopped doesn't stop these people from being able to see their families. You know, because I could see them doing something draconian like that. You know, oh, yeah, we stopped the visit. We stopped this practice that we had, which was illegal, by the way. But in the meantime, we're going to continue to violate their rights and not let them see their families.
Yeah, you got it. You know Judge Metry?
Yes.
We're going to have Teddy. Yeah. We're going to have Judge Metry on next. We want you to stay with us. We'll be right back after this.
We used to be neighbors.
Oh, there you go. We'll be right back with Behind the Bench just after this.
You're listening to Behind the Bench with Todd Flood. If it's a question of law and it's in the news, you'll learn about it on Behind the Bench. Once again, here's Todd.
Welcome back to Behind the Bench. And I must tell you, we have a special guest with us, Judge Teddy Metry. I've known Judge Metry now for quite some time, I think well over 20 plus years. And obviously, one of the great lawyers, Todd Perkins, and the new paralegal at Flood Law, Kyra Newman. Judge, welcome to Behind the Bench. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, Todd, thank you for having me. Nice to speak to you, Todd, and Kyra, congratulations on your graduation.
Thank you so much.
So, Judge, we were just talking, Todd and I and Kyra, about, you don't know about this yet, we're bringing a lawsuit coming up soon against the state and the Department of Corrections. They're strip searching the women at the Huron Valley Correctional Facility, which is not uncommon, but now they've changed it to the strip searching. They're doing videotaping of the strip searching, and it goes into the cloud, which obviously is beyond comprehension to us, but regardless, Todd and I were just going back and forth about how crazy that is. After, you know, you think about the population of the female prisons and what they have to go through and what they have been through. Apparently 90% of them have already been through some traumatic experience of either being raped or having domestic violence. I don't know. This world for which we live in, sometimes you can't make it up, but it is remarkable. I'm sure you probably haven't heard about it or thought about that or even having that concept come across your radar, but could you imagine that?
No, and I'm quite surprised to hear that, especially after what had happened in the prior lawsuits that have been brought against the women's prison and how they've been treated in the past. So it is quite surprising.
Yeah, it is. So, Judge, tell us a little bit. You know, one thing we were talking in a prior guest, Tracy Cooley, the executive director of the Detroit Bar. And Todd Perkins and I have talked about this on many shows, that how important it is for people to know our judges, how important it is for people that, you know, have some concept of who's sitting where and the functions of what a judge does. Tell us, you know, we have a huge listening audience, and we'd love to, you know, just tell the listeners a little bit about you and where you sit.
Sure. Thanks, Todd. I am one of the four municipal judges in the Grosse Pointe Municipal Judges. We are the only part-time judges in the entire state. So there's four of us, and there's probably 451 other judges in the state that are full-time. So I do have my court in Grosse Pointe. I sometimes will sit, you'll see me, I know Mr. Perkins sees me a little more often, or his office does, as a visiting judge out in Macomb County in the district courts there. But our municipal courts are just like the district courts. We're just not as busy. We have a little bit less of a threshold for our civil cases. But it is important to know your judges, but it's equally or more important to know the clerks and those who get you checked in and handle some paperwork.
We always call those the kings and queens, the people, those the clerks, right,
Todd? The gatekeepers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, obviously my man Perkins, Todd Perkins, is running for mayor. So you're probably not seeing him as much, but you probably see his office, I would imagine. He's got a slew of lawyers that are coming out there. But you handle everything. You handle from the misdemeanors to the felonies and the bindover decisions. You handle it all. There's not, just because it's part-time, you still see your fair share of, you know, cases that come through, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. We handle the traffic tickets, the ordinance violations, the landlord tenants. I've had cases that started in my court, and it all ended up in the Michigan Supreme Court. So it happened to be a mortgage foreclosure that runs through a landlord-tenant when they go to remove someone from the house. So we've seen our lot, and we may not be busy, but we've seen capital crimes to the small, very minor ordinance violations.
I can only imagine. So that being said, the part-time, that gives you also the opportunity to practice?
Yes, I still practice law. I have to, that's how I earn my living, I tell my family. They think, my young girls think it's cool having a judge as a dad, but as a part-time judge, you don't earn enough to put them through the University of Michigan. So no, I still practice. I still practice law.
Time flies, Judge. I remember when they were just on the tricycles.
Yeah, Todd and I had children in elementary school together for a few years, and it's shocking how old they are now, right, Todd?
Yeah, absolutely. Good to see them. Good to see them doing well.
Thank you. And yeah, Todd, I you know, we haven't talked, but you know, great storyline for you, and wish you luck.
Yeah, I, you know, sometimes what they say, it's better to be lucky than good, but I hope I can be both. You know, but it's it is a challenge. It is a you know, but it's the same thing you do, as far as you do what you do and give passion to that bench as a means of service. You're not doing it for monetary value. That's why you still have a prolific practice. And you know, you give and you study the people when you're there, and you look people over, and you treat people like people deserve to be treated. You have always done that. And it's, you know, it's a great thing that your parents have given you.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. And I try, and sometimes it's hard to, and sometimes the people don't want it. But there are success stories, and it's great. And, you know, I had a young high school kid who's been having struggles. He's been in and out of my court for about 16 months. And well, he's out of high school now, but a defense attorney on another case came up after and, you know, said he was really happy at how he, to see how that happened and told me I was making a difference. So to hear that from someone like you or another defense attorney is nice to have. It does make a difference.
That's awesome. You know, I was going to ask you, you change trajectories of humans' lives, right? And I would imagine you have some kids that you've taken under your wing or monitored in probation or whatever the case may be. That has to be probably one of the more rewarding things you do as sitting as a judge.
Absolutely. And it is, the success stories are phenomenal. And unfortunately the tragedies can be outweighed, but the success stories are great. And I've had people come back to me and thank me. I've had people tell me it was a difference maker, parents and the young people who were young at one time. So it is great to take someone under your wing and watch them succeed.
That's awesome. Your practice, what are you primarily hitting in your practice?
I've been doing a lot of more small business as of late. But with that comes a lot of other things. You incorporate somebody and help them obtain a lease or buy another business, and next thing you know, you're representing their assistant in the divorce or their employee who got in a little bit of trouble after a Lions game or something. So it spreads out. I do some criminal, some probate law, and some divorce and small business.
I got it. So, you know, one of the Lions, I mean, obviously, this year had to be a prolific year. We've had a lot of great success with the Lions. I'm sure there's been a few celebrations. But,
yeah.
Well, I've known you for ever since, and your father, you know, for so many years. And I can tell you and everyone listening, wonderful judge, great to have on the bench. And on top of it, a great heart and a great human being all the way around. So love having you, Judge, on the show. First time, yeah. And I hope many more times to come. Brother Todd, I love you, my man. You be well.
You too, man. You guys stay safe and stay prosperous.
You got it.
Hey, Todd, thank you for having me. I appreciate the kind words. And I will tell you, Mr. Perkins and then subsequently his brother, Sean, who is now a judge, appeared in front of me many times, and they were always excellent advocates and representatives of the bench. So, and as you, Mr. Flood, have also appeared in front of me and did a great job on a couple matters I've had you. So you guys are doing great, and appreciate you both.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you so much. Nice talking to you.
We'll be back next month with Behind the Bench. And Kyra, we're going to make you a new fixture in the addition to Behind the Bench. Brother Todd, love you, my man. You be well.
Love you. All right, I'll see you soon.
All right. Thank you. And we'll be back next month with Behind the Bench.